Hey, Sens fans, this is Stuntman Stu, and you're listening to the Sixth Sense Podcast.
Welcome to the Sixth Sense Podcast. This week I'm joined in studios at CKCU at Carleton University with Graham. How are you doing today?
Not too bad. Feels like we haven't been here in a while, though.
I know. Felt like a big hangover this week. Just waiting to get back in.
But how have you been doing? I haven't seen you in a while.
I've been good. I've been busy with work.
This is the normal part of the program where if we are on real radio, we talk about our kids and stuff.
Oh, yeah, God, of course, and about our, well, obviously none of us have kids, neither of us.
My wife hates me.
My coworkers are so stupid.
Oh, anyways.
If you worked at the Team 1200, you probably could say that, though, right?
Oh, maybe. But, so, Ottawa Senators, big news, Brian Lee's been extended. How do you feel about that?
A little disappointed you said big news, then drop the Brian Lee bomb. Are you surprised?
No. What was the alternative?
Flipping the trade deadline.
Not sign him to a contract?
Yeah.
He's under team control. Why not, right?
Trade him or keep him.
Yeah.
That's really basically what it boils down to, right? Yeah. One or the other.
The trade could still happen, so.
The one thing that really, interests me about this is that our blue line could potentially be quite, a logjam next year. If everyone who is currently signed to a contract even makes the team or plays on the team this year, we could be looking at, what, 8 or 9 defensemen possibly?
Yeah, I was actually surprised that Bruce Garriott mentioned the other day that Chris Campoli might, he expects him to re-sign.
Yep, RFA.
So, yeah, it's a bit of a logjam, especially when you consider that Cowan and Weirkotch are, maybe they won't make the lineup, but at least they're expected to push.
Well, all indications are that Brian Murray fully expects Jared Cowan to make the team, right? I mean, we've seen that countless times in the papers. And as far as Weirkotch goes, I mean, we know how American collegiate defensemen take their time to develop and then get a nice cushy 2-year contract when they're RFAs. But
way to tie that in, Brian Lee. That's awesome.
Yeah, but hopefully Patty there turns out a little bit better than Brain. I think the best part of the Leafs game, sorry to date the podcast by referencing an event that happened, but...
Yeah, we already got...
When I was watching the Leafs game...
Ripped into for that.
Yeah. Colton Orr just fucking drills Brian Lee behind the net, prompting the, that little tussle where Colton Orr did his little thing that we've recounted so many times now.
Yeah, that was really impressive on his part.
Absolutely no class at all. On his end, and I was reading the paper the next day, and there was a big article about him. And
you play for the Leafs. Why are you showboating?
He regrets it. He says that's not who I am. That's not what I do. Blah blah blah. Well, fuck, you did it. That's who you are now.
I think the worst part is it looked premeditated. As soon as that fight was over, fingers are out.
Yeah, memo, Colton Orr. Not everyone goes to a Senators Leafs game to see you fight.
At least he didn't bend over his gloves on the ice and pretend that they were on fire.
Terrible celebrations, terrible fights, terrible showboating. Can anyone in the NHL really showboat? I haven't seen it. Do you remember when Ty Domi...
Timo Solani throwing his gloves up in the air and shooting him with a stick. That's,
That would get just annihilated
Theo Fleury used to go fucking nuts a while.
Jump in the boards. Do you remember when Domi scored that
Mind
goal?
Mind you, he was on a little bit of everything, so...
Yeah, that could have been others. But when Domi rode the stick...
Oh, yeah.
What do you call that?
The Tiger Williams thing?
Yeah, like riding the bull, mm-hmm. I guess. But yeah, that was an okay celebration. I don't think I've ever seen a really good Senators celebration after a goal. Who used to do the salute?
Did you like the Foligno leap? You know, paying homage to his father?
Yeah. Great. I'm sure his dad really liked it. I would have liked to have seen something with a spin or maybe a flip.
But, like, what the fuck do you expect, though? Because, like, in baseball, it's like, you know, some guys take a walk. You know, they do the whole, like, cross the heart, point to the sky thing.
Yeah. Kovalev's moonwalk.
Kovalev's moonwalk? That was good?
Yeah, that wasn't bad. You didn't answer my question. Who did the salute? Do you remember that? Didn't someone do the salute Jager after
a
while.
Goal? Jager.
Oh, yeah. The mullet years.
The mullet. Yeah, that was actually his Washington days, I think.
No.
I think so, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. It might have been his later Pittsburgh days.
We'll have a YouTube challenge when we take a little break here.
Yeah, we'll do that after this segment.
I'll challenge that. Yeah, once I can't believe we've been talking for 5 minutes about fucking Brian Lee and moonwalks.
We're on fire.
Did you see the pictures in the paper of Brian Lee? The kid still hasn't fucking aged one day.
No facial hair yet.
No, she looks like, you know, a 16-year-old Norwegian boy from the woods. All tame looking and everything. He looks a little bit soft, actually.
But keeping with the blue line, I know one of the guys that you wanted to touch on since the trade deadline was Andy Sutton. So what do you think of Andy Sutton so far?
He's a good hockey player, man. Every time a player gets traded, you always see these weird, you know, analysis of these players, right? And everyone throws their 2 cents in. And one of the things that he was not advertised when he came over was an offensive defenseman. He doesn't look weak.
He's down low quite a bit in the offensive zone, keeping the play alive.
One thing that really catches me about Andy Sutton is just pure strength. Straight-arming dudes and knocking them down.
6'6" will do that, though.
Yeah, that's great. Hopefully we don't have Sutton on the team next year if those headshot penalties come in. The headshots?
Yeah.
Let's deal with that in a minute.
That's, deal with that later? Okay.
That's a big...
We'll come back to that, then.
That's a big matzo ball. More Andy Sutton.
More Andy Sutton. That's what you want to see. Is that a guy that you consider...
100%. I think that
resign him?
I think Andy Sutton's not the kind of guy who would go on maybe days 1 through 2 or 3 of free agency, whereas a guy like Anton Volchenkov probably will be a guy to go right off the bat.
And that's where you get all your steals.
And that's where you get
once
your
the
steals.
First few days, yeah.
Yeah, and it also would give the Senators time to maybe decide if, you know, worst case scenario, Volchenkov flees the coop, and, you know, Sutton wouldn't be bad. And I know it's only a small sample size again. But him and Carlson look okay together. Carlson certainly
showed
some poise.
Sutton definitely doesn't look like Mike Comet right on the ice. I'll give him that much.
No, he looked quite good.
I've actually been pleasantly surprised at how well the Matt Cullen and Andy Sutton have fit in since they were acquired. That was probably my biggest concern, how they fit in, what their roles were, how they were defined. But I've been absolutely surprised.
That goal against Edmonton just had eyes. Unbelievable shot. That was great.
You've been praising that since the car ride.
Yeah, it was a hell of a shot. What do you want me to do? Carlson did have a good game. How good is that kid, eh?
He's getting better every game.
He is fucking amazing.
He's playing a lot of minutes, too.
Yeah, he is consistently logging between 23 and 25 minutes, it seems.
Mm-hmm. That game against Edmonton, that was perhaps the first time we've seen him get caught with a big hit, too. I think it was Brule who hit him along the sidewall.
Yeah. You know, every once in a while you see him get bumped, but there's been nothing devastating. Like, his size hasn't been an issue yet, really.
No, not at all.
And the fact that he could get pushed off the puck a little bit easier than some other guys, well, he can sure beat them with his foot speed.
He gets to the puck first, then they can't hit him. Yeah.
Yeah, position well, and he moves the puck well. Like, he's always got his head up looking.
With some of the quicker teams in the Eastern Conference, he'll be a real asset in terms of his speed and not getting beat to the outside. I know Matt Carrickner's had some problems lately with that, but...
I mean, not everyone on the team is going to be able to crush you on the blue line, right? I mean, you got to have
but
these
it should.
Guys.
That's the way hockey's got to be played.
Oh, fuck you. That's such a
you know
Kingston
what?
Remark. Yeah, so we definitely, definitely, that's the way hockey gets played, right? Lots of fights, big hits. The GMs were talking about it this week. Have you noticed in the paper that they talk about these things they call headshots?
Who's Matt Cook?
Wait, way too far ahead of me here. I'm still trying to figure out this headshot thing.
Yeah.
Is that like a Theo Fleury move? No? I don't know. I don't know what this is.
Stretch. You're stretching for it.
Think about it, folks. There's a lot of different ways you can go with that one.
There was actually a good article on the Battle of Alberta, website there, and they detailed Matt Cook's history for just this season alone. I think they had like 10 or 12 players who've been injured by this guy.
Unbelievable.
But, I mean, he's not a predator. Why should he get suspended?
NHL's got to protect their assets, right? They're really marketable guys.
Oh, fuck. Can you imagine if he hit someone in a... Well, Savard's a great player.
Oh, he's unimportant. That's why he didn't get. That's why Cook didn't get suspended.
Oh, I put him in the same bracket as maybe a Spezza.
No,
he puts up them around the same points.
Absolutely not.
But imagine he actually hit like a higher profile guy.
Well, Savard, I'll be honest, Savard is a very high profile guy playing on an original six team in a huge hockey market, right?
No, that's true, and that could adversely affect their playoff chances as well.
Oh, definitely.
That's a team that's having trouble scoring anyways.
Think back to Randy Sexton saying if they had David Booth this year, they could be possibly competing for home ice. Whether or not that's...
Again, another questionable hit that wasn't suspended.
Yep, exactly.
These direct things, consequence of this blindside hit.
They have long-term repercussions for both the players and the team. There's a lot of stuff that rides on this, right? As we know, draft picks, money, everything.
The blindside hit is like the new in reference. It's like the new puck-moving defenseman.
Oh, yeah. Well, now that they've come up with a rule for it, or whatever this new rule is going to be... Now we can spend the next, what, year or so talking about how the rule has holes in it, how it's flawed, how it's garbage, how it needs to be reevaluated.
I think the referee has complete discretion.
Yeah. I'd rather the referee have discretion than the beat writers who are turning out these terrible stories. I've seen every possible argument possible, and no one stands up, really. I haven't seen Don Cherry yet this week, so I don't know what he's going to say, but everyone is... anti-headshot, obviously, as you probably should be, right? It just gets tiring, reading all the same garbage all the time. Everyone trying to be unique and get a new angle on it. Who gives a shit?
Well, how many papers are there in Canada? You know, you can't. It's tough to find a unique angle, right?
You see Chris Neal stick to the head he took last night?
Yeah. He was okay.
Yeah. Chris Neal complaining about a dirty hit. Does that complaint become less legitimate since it comes from a guy like Chris Neal who does have a... He does have a history. I mean, we're not Bleeding Heart fans, right? We can admit that Chris Neal does lay some questionable hits.
Well, Chris Neal's hit on Drury was probably the same as the David Booth hit.
That was such an awesome hit, though.
I know.
And then it spurred that whole argument on the, or heated debate, rather.
Kudos to Buffalo for actually sticking up for it, though.
For the, yeah, for Buffalo and for the sports broadcasters who stuck up for it, too.
Well, look at all the Boston guys who are just standing around and who didn't do anything with Cook. Like, look at all the guys that Cook has injured, and nobody's done anything about it.
Yeah, I don't know why.
That's a testament to Matt Cook.
Laperriere.
How does he get away with it? Oh, Laperriere will fight. No, he will. Don't roll your eyes at me.
Well, look at Rutu. Same thing, right?
I think he talks a good game.
We've been a little bit... we haven't got the full Rutu experience, I don't think, in Ottawa.
Well, there was the Coletta hit.
Vancouver, Pittsburgh.
Aside from the Coletta hit, I haven't really seen him do anything ridiculously dirty.
Didn't he bite Andrew Peters' finger?
Oh, well. It's all part of the game.
I'm sure there's been more. He's only been here for, what, a year now? Year and a half?
Yeah.
Give him some time.
Just give him the playoffs and see what he can do.
I'll throw this out real quick. Do you think he re-signs when he comes up?
I can't see him. I can't envision him making more money than he does right now, though.
Yeah.
Anyways, fourth line guy.
That's a debate for later.
But actually, one guy who's actually coming up, well, he's not coming up. It is no trade clause, actually. Expires on July 1st.
Yay.
And this goes back to you saying that Ottawa will have a lot of defensemen on the roster next year. So, Philip Kuba. Thoughts.
Discuss. Philip Kuba, he's probably one of the most tradable players on the Sens blue line. Very reasonable contract. One of the things I said about it right away last year when we were hosting the live blog on deadline day when that was announced, that is such a great trade bait contract that he was signed to. It just reeks of the Oakland Athletics. Really nice. Kuba's a good piece to have, but if you're going to start bringing in some of these other kids, and if you're going to have guys like, if you really want Campoli there, suddenly you're going to have to pick and choose what you're going to want your blue line to look like.
I don't think anyone really wants Campoli there.
No, absolutely not. I really don't see him having a large role or future in the NHL.
Bold statements, Tim.
Well, he's getting fucking benched right now. He's getting benched for Alex Pickard. Carlson's told his job. Like it was nothing.
Yeah, he hasn't produced offensively at all. I think he has like two, three goals.
Yeah.
Nothing. I think Volchenkov might have more. Close. Anyways, I think Volchenkov might have two.
How many goals does Karkner have?
Two or three.
Yeah. So there you go.
But anyways, speaking of Kuba, him and Foligno may rejoin the team on Saturday in Vancouver. That might be the first time Ottawa's been healthy all year.
Yeah, that's when things get real interesting, right?
Oh, it's great timing.
Who's the odd man out?
Probably, you figure it's either what, Winchester or Shannon?
Yeah, one of those two has to give on forward for
and
sure.
And on defense, Brian Lee.
Brain's got to go. He's the obvious choice there, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can't really sink Chris Campoli down.
No. Well,
you could, but someone would probably snatch him up. Especially as the plan, like,
the Shreveport Pirates, like, an industrial league in Austin, Texas, or something, maybe.
Fuck.
You know who's gonna snap him up? That manager at Subway's downstairs in the on the main floor here, Carlton.
Oh, Carlton, yeah.
I bet Chris Campoli could make a mean sandwich for me. I don't know if I'd let him, though. I don't think his hands are soft enough. I think he might break the bread.
I was expecting you to use the, would you like fries with that stuff?
Too many fast food jokes.
Oh, good times.
Move this box from one side of the room to the other, sir. Thank you. So, Graham, let's talk here about the Senators moving forward, right? The regular season is beginning to wind down. Playoff picture, you kind of get it. At the same time, though, you really don't have any idea what's going to happen, right? I mean, Senators right now, fifth place, correct?
Yeah, but they have a chance to move up to either third or fourth.
Yeah, but if the playoffs started today, which is Thursday for everyone, because this is going to be old by the time you hear it.
So don't send us those emails.
It's going to be New Jersey, right? It would be New Jersey that we'd face off with.
Yeah.
I don't like that matchup.
Really?
I'd like that in round three, maybe.
Well, Kovalchuk's starting to actually play well.
Yep.
He's putting up some points now.
Lou likes him, eh?
Yeah.
Lou likes him.
But I mean,
obviously he likes him.
Guys who've played under Lemaire, I know we've talked about this before, but like a guy like Gabrick, you wouldn't think would be a guy you could thrive under Lemaire, but he did in Minnesota. So it's not really that unrational to look at Kovalchuk's success with Jersey and, you know.
Well, look at Zajac and Parise. I mean, those guys haven't exactly had their hands cuffed.
They're good two-way players, though, yeah.
They haven't had their hands cuffed by the coach, though, right?
No, exactly.
Or Jacques Martin. Think back to those days in Ottawa.
I don't want to think back to those days.
Those days were great. Jason Spezza was not a man. He was a boy in a man's league. I feel like that should be a tagline for a DVD from that season or something.
We should get like a t-shirt that has like Spezza's head, and then we should get like, it's a man's league written underneath it. That would be fantastic.
Maybe we can talk about the new most quotable man in Ottawa Senators hockey right now, Corey Clouston, the cold general coach. He's awesome, eh?
You like him.
I love him. I love his demeanor. I love how focused and high energy and intense the guy is. Like we both read the quotes here about him getting tickets for family and friends in Edmonton and Calgary. And then you get this, you know, what seems like a polished press release about how it was going to be all pressure on him. He didn't care that anyone was going to be there. It didn't matter to him. He just cared about the game. Blah, blah, blah. Great.
Piss off. Here are your tickets. Leave me alone.
Yeah, exactly.
Cold-blooded. I like it. That's what everybody calls him, though.
Yep, and it works. And
no, he's ruthless. I think Elliot Friedman from Hockey Night in Canada actually had that as one of his tweets. He likes what he was doing with the goaltending. It's ruthless. I love it.
Yeah.
I think Clouston has a long shelf life here in Ottawa, though.
Definitely. I see him becoming a real staple. I see him kind of getting attached the way that, you know, like those, you know, basketball coaches in the Midwest, you know, Boise State, whatever.
Boise State?
Sure. Throwing out the first one that came to my mind here, the most academically inclined of all the schools in the Midwest, Boise State.
No Indiana?
No.
No Bobby Knight?
But I see the community and, you know, the sports community here really gravitating towards him just because he is that kind of guy. People like hard-ass coaches, right?
But he's well-educated, and I think he's well-respected within the room. Like,
and he keeps his temper down on the bench, right? Like, you see him barking, but you never really see him, you know, chewing out referees or players on the bench.
Well, it's like Chris Neal's comments from the game against Edmonton where he was cross-checked in the back of the head by Ryan Whitney, and then he didn't say anything to the referees, and he said, oh, I'll let Corey do it.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
Corey will look after his players.
Very unlike not Matt. Still got Matt Cook on the mind. Mike Babcock during the Olympics. I don't get to watch a lot of his games when he's coaching. But you see that stupid scowl that kind of fluctuates between just completely confused, like he's on a really bad LSD trip and has no idea where he is in
and
the jungle.
And it helps that his like, lower jaw like juts out.
Yeah. He's got the Leno table going on.
Oh, man.
Yeah, hilarious. And then it goes to complete anger by only really changing his eyebrows. I don't like that.
And you never got that with Jacques Martin because he was too busy looking at the scoreboard.
Oh, yeah, I was always too busy looking at his ears. I'm wondering if he ever was concerned about the height of his collar and whether it would make his ears look too big or can he wear a toque on the bench? How long till I can coach in an outdoor classic? So, Graham, I can't help but notice that the clock has struck the time at which we need to call our next guest.
Yeah, this is going to be important too, so don't want to miss this. But
this might be one of the most important,
relevant,
significant.
Yeah. Let's just get Jay Grossman on the phone.
Yeah, that's easier than thinking of words. Maybe Jay Grossman will have some words for us.
Sounds good. We'll be right back with Jay Grossman. Stay tuned.
The word is about, there's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating. The newspapers shout, a new style is growing, but it don't know if it's coming or going. There is fashion, there is fat, some is good, some is bad, and the joke feels rather sad that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
Joining us on the program now is a person of significant interest to Senators fans. He is the president of Puck Agency, and he's the agent for Anton Volchenkov. Jay Grossman, welcome to the program. How are you doing?
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it, Graham.
It's a bit bittersweet, I guess, for Tim and I, because Tim and I really appreciate you coming on the show, but we're also kind of antsy for an Anton Volchenkov extension, so we're a little bit concerned that you're not talking to Brian Murray.
You think my time would be better productive, more productive in that regard? don't sell yourself short at all. I think it's been an interesting experience dealing with Brian on this. I mean, I've dealt with Brian for a long period of time. Obviously, he's been a general manager and a coach in the league for as long as I've been representing players. And I've got a lot of respect for the way Brian handles things. I mean, he's pretty no-nonsense in terms of, you know, getting right to the heart of the matter. I think that we've had some good dialogue with Anton. Quite frankly, he is the type of guy that, if you're in my shoes, and I know that's, it may be hard to hear this as, coming from your perspective, but, if you're in my shoes, you're not afraid to take a player like this to July 1, because you know that other players have gotten, pretty significant bounty on the open market. And, he's a kind of player who's very identifiable in what he does. You know exactly what you're going to get with him. You know exactly what kind of role he plays. He shuts down the other team's top players. He blocks shots. He hits players. He's involved in the game all the time. He leaves everything out on the ice. And, there's no team in the league that I can see that wouldn't want a player like that. He's a good teammate. He's a good citizen. And so, in that respect, you're always cautious about players who you're not sure how they're going to do in the marketplace or how they're going to fare in the marketplace. The marketplace is always changing. Typically speaking, at the beginning of a collective bargaining agreement, we see teams that, sort of blow their brains out and in some cases may, in fact, overpay players to get them to come to, their city or to get them to go somewhere. But, I think that, we're in a situation now where the cap is, it is where it is. It is what it is. And, it's something that everybody's had to deal with. But, you as a result of that, you have to balance the fact that, you want to max out in terms of where your client should be in terms of compensation, what they deserve. But obviously there's other factors as well, and you have to take that into consideration when you're looking at these things. And, you know, so I, having said all that, I would say that, you know, we have had some good conversations. We don't have a deal done at this point. You know, when that happens, I can't, you know, predict or make any promises to you guys, but we are working on it.
Yeah, Jay, you mentioned that there can be other considerations involved in a contract negotiation. Is there anything out of the ordinary that's extremely important to Anton Volchenkov in these discussions?
Well, you know, we always sit down with our players, and, you know, each case, I mean, you know, what makes what we do interesting is each case is always different. You know, players' priorities can be different. You know, if he's married with family versus a single player versus, you know, being happy with, you know, playing on a good team versus maybe being in a city where the team isn't as good, or the city isn't what you'd like it to be, and, you know, those types of things. But, you know, preparation is always the key to a good result. You know, and making the two ends meet with whatever the arrangement is that you reach, or the agreement is that you reach with the club. And you know, I've been very impressed with Anton's view on the situation. I think, you know, a couple of years ago when we signed his current contract, you know, we were facing restricted free agency. We signed 1 year of unrestricted free agency. I think that, you know, he it wasn't that we were asked to take a quote-unquote hometown discount of any sort, but, you know, I think he fit nicely within their salary structure, given some of the other players that they had to pay. You know, sitting down and talking with him, I think he's very cognizant. What I've been, you know, quite honestly most impressed with is how he feels he fits in with a team. And that is something that we've sat down and you know, that in and of itself is a unique characteristic for him to acknowledge that and feel how important it is that he fit in, you know, to the team that he plays for, because he plays such an identifiable role. And on top of it, frankly, I mean, I think a guy who plays with that level of intensity playing on a poor team or a weak team, it's kind of a waste of your time. You know, if you sacrifice yourself the way he does, I think playing on a weak team is not exactly where you want to be. So I've been really impressed with his, you know, with his analysis of that. And, you know, that's something that we've revisited, not every day. Obviously, you know, when you go through these things and they happen during the course of the season, you know, you need to pick and choose your spots as far as when you feel is the most opportune time to, like I said, revisit the game plan or preparation that you've set out at the beginning of the season, which, you know, you may have to react, read, and adjust to over the course of the year. But like I said, I think, you know, in that sense, I've been very impressed with his, you know, with his desire to really put hockey first in terms of making that decision.
Earlier you mentioned you know exactly what you're going to get on a nightly basis from Anton Volchenkov, so whether it's blocking shots or hits. As his agent, how do you evaluate the worth of a defensive defenseman?
Well, you know, that's a really excellent question, and I think historically defensive defensemen have been the hardest players to evaluate. You know, in the context of arbitration, for example, what they simply look at is ice time and shorthanded ice time, which, you know, Anton fares pretty well in that regard. Does that explain the whole picture of what he, you know, what kind of player he is? I don't think so. You know, in this, you know, last few years, I have come across a few, you know, groups that have looked at things more carefully from a statistical standpoint. In fact, the first question I posed to them when they said to me that they wanted to embark on these kinds of things was, you know, how do you better define, you know, what a defensive defenseman does. And, you know, there were a lot of statistics that they were able to come up with in terms of, you know, determining how does the player play, does the player play in high pressure situations, how does the player fare in high pressure situations, you know, does he make his defense partner a better player, does his defense partner make him a better player? You know, these are all questions that you can ask. Obviously, you know, a statistic like plus minus is a difficult one, in that it's not as cut and dry. Even weighted plus minus, for example, you know, if you weighted against the average of the rest of the team, is not necessarily the greatest indicator of what a player does. You know, in Anton's case, you do have, you know, this situation with block shots. He's about to embark upon, you know, a record here of being the first player to record 1,000 block shots since they kept the statistic. And he's the only player that's been in the top 10 in every year that they have kept the statistic, which is since, you know, the lockout. And, you know, in that sense, maybe what he does is a little bit more identifiable in some of the traditional statistics. But we do look at things in other ways. And, you know, at the same time, there is a bit of the, you know, the gut sense that you have of what a player is by just watching him. And I don't think there's very many people, you know, around the league who don't look at a player like that and see exactly what he does.
Now, we've seen over the past month here, two of your clients actually handled differently by their organizations, Ilya Kovalchuk and Anton Volchenkov, one who was traded at before the deadline and one who was not. Can you contrast the two situations and what led to both of those decisions?
Well, we actually had a third situation, which was you know, identical in that all three players were, though of different positions, the same age, and that was with Pekka Rinne, who, you know, we signed to a contract with Nashville, and as a result of that, he will step into the role of, and has had the role at times as being their number one goaltender. And in that case, you know, not only did the club not trade him, but they signed him to an extension prior to the deadline. So, you know, there are three cases, and each one of them has been different. It's really hard to, like I said, it's really hard to make comparisons. Certainly, you know, a player like Kovalchuk is a superstar. He's one of the top players in the league, and you know, the dynamic of what he meant to the Atlanta organization and the things that we had to think about in terms of where we wanted to be and what our objectives were, you know, a lot different in terms of the decision making, you know, that we've had to go through with Anton. And that's fine. I mean, I think, you know, like I said, each case that there's a particular DNA that runs through each case that's quite different. And, you know, the one thing you learn is that you can't handle every situation the same way. If you do, then you face a situation where, you know, it's not going to work out. You know, you can't ask for more than $10 million a year for a fourth line player. It's just not going to work, you know. So, you know, I think you know, in the case of of Pekka Rinne, the team, you know, with a goaltender, it's you know, there can only be really one starter and one backup, and in that situation it was a lot more clear-cut as far as what the team wanted to do. I think in Anton's case, you know, it may have been less clear-cut. The team started out not as well. They went through a period of time where they, you know, were on a losing streak. Then they went on the opposite, a bit of a roller coaster of going on a huge winning streak and hopefully have solidified a good playoff spot here. So I think there's been a little bit more up and down to their season and some decisions to make because quite frankly, Anton is a more established player, even though they're the same age. He's a more established player in terms of the number of games he's played and like I said, you kind of know what you're going to get with him.
Jay, with the emergence of the KHL and because of like contract negotiations for guys like Ilya Kovalchuk and Anton Volchenkov, like Tim and I have noticed on the various websites and the comment threads and on the message boards that like Russian players have unfairly been labeled with or stigmatized with this chasing the money kind of dynamic. Did you want to comment on that at all?
Well, you know what, I think it's hard to make generalizations, and I particularly get offended when they're stereotype. You know, I think if you make judgments on people based upon, ethnicity or gender or race or anything along those lines, it's a mistake because not everybody's the same and not everybody views things the same way. I think European players in general, and again, I'm being cautious when I say this because it may seem like a generalization. They're here to earn a living. They don't grow up with the same, sense of, playing in the backyard for the Stanley Cup and having grown up with that dream. I mean, obviously there's a great, as time goes by, there's more of a generation of players that have recognized that as an objective. But I think that the players realize that it is a job, it's a business, and that they have come all the way over here for the purpose of of earning a living, and so I do think that there's a part of that that may be a little bit different. But I also think that at the same time, there's an obligation on the part of the player, I think, to, players have a limited, very limited window of opportunity to earn their income. If you look at a lot of players, once they retire, the game changes so dramatically. You go from being a very high earner to a situation where you've been trained for something that you can't do beyond the age of, 40 years old, let's say, to use a, rule of thumb. So, I think there's a bit of an obligation on the part of the player, to challenge and have the pride to match his contract with his ability. And the other part of it is that when you look at the cap equation, some players just have to pick themselves up and go to other cities or other places simply because other teams may have more cap space, may have more opportunity to pay those players. And you've had a real change in the sense that before the lockout, players looked at the guy in the stall next to them and said, well, you know what? If you get a really good contract, that's great because it helps me, And if we're comparable players, then I benefit from that. Well, now in this system, it's just the opposite. The better contract that you get means, in sort of a technical sense, means the worse contract that I get. So, I think players just in general, they do have an obligation. There's only so much milk that can fit in the carton. And in that regard, they have to, they have to challenge the situation and get the most they can while they play. Now having said that, obviously there are other factors that go into that.
Yeah, like you were saying there, contract negotiations, it's often the case that players escape the villainization tag, and instead a lot of the scrutiny gets directed at the agent involved in the negotiations. Does a scenario like that mean that you're doing your job really well, or is it just misguided venting by the fans?
You know, I think that you know, I think that fans don't really enjoy the financial aspect of it, or thinking about the financial aspect of it. You know, when you're a fan and your player, you know, scores 40 goals, or you know, blocks 1,000 shots, or you know, wins a bunch of playoff rounds, or wins a Stanley Cup, you know, then they think they're worth, you know, I don't know, $10 or $15 million a year. But you know, as soon as there's one bad game, you know, they don't feel that they're ready to throw the player out the window. You know, so I think from the fan, and look, you know, the fans are, you know, they pay the price for admission, and they've got the right to feel the way they want to feel. You know, I don't think it's so drastic in that sense. You know, for anybody in my position to sort of take that personally would be foolish. I mean, our job is to act on behalf of our clients, to meet their needs. You know, there aren't any players that we work for where we make the decisions. You know, we make joint decisions. We, you know, they rely on our counsel. And you know, especially when you're talking about free agents, you have to make a judgment call. You know, one of the hardest things in free agency, and you know, you saw it with a few players last year especially, is, you know, is to be in a situation where you've been offered more money prior to July 1 than you get offered after July 1. You know, that's a very difficult call to make. And, you know, the player's got to rely on the experience of the agent and you know, how he gauges the marketplace. And from there, you know, the player takes direction, but ultimately it's his decision. You know, when you talk about the Kovalchuk situation, obviously he was offered a substantial amount of money, and you know that's well done. And you know, I won't get into the reasons for the decision he made, and you know, that's not what we're here to necessarily talk about. But you know, ultimately, it is the player's decision, and you know, your objective is to prepare the player, guide the player, and allow him to be, you know, well educated as far as the decision that he has to ultimately make.
Jay, earlier you mentioned you're comfortable going right up to the July 1st deadline. That doesn't exactly give me warm, fuzzy feelings. And the fact that, like, Tim and I have looked at the free agent market for defensemen, and a lot of the defensemen who are the higher echelon, higher value guys are kind of old, 37-ish, 36, like, yeah, guys like Niedermeyer, Lidstrom. Volchenkov's young. He's entering his prime. Should Tim and I and other Senators fans be concerned that Volchenkov could walk?
Well, it's a good question. You know, when I set out to look at the marketplace, quote unquote, you know, I look at Anton, and I think when you balance those very factors that you talk about, age, potential, accomplishment, achievement, candidly, I don't think that you could point to a defenseman that has more value on the open market. And now you may say, well, I'm getting a less fuzzy feeling as you're talking. But
something like that.
You know, but you know, look, there's a marketplace that you have to work off of, you know, from the previous year. And there's certain players out there that have signed certain contracts. And, you know, it's pretty hard to ignore those contracts. At the same time, like I said, if you take a look at the situation, I mean, Anton likes playing in Ottawa. He likes the direction of the team. He likes the way he fits in with the team. He knows what his job is. It's pretty identifiable. He doesn't have to come in and go to a different situation where there may be a lot of unknowns. And And I think you have to weigh the two things. You know, if you, you know, as fans, you know, you just look, you look at it from a black and white standpoint. We want this player. He's a good player. The team should re-sign him. You know, and I understand that. When you look at it from the player's standpoint, he has to decide, well, you know, do I go to the open market where somebody might, you know, knock my socks off, or, you know, do I decide that this is the best place for me and maybe negotiate a deal that you know, maybe viewed as, you know, fair or more favorable to the club. I think, you know, in this case or in any other case, it's, you know, it's presenting an option that really is the best alternative for both parties. That's how you make a deal.
All right. Well, thank you for your honesty there. I think we both appreciate it. Now, normally, Jay, at the end of our interviews, we usually do a sort of quick hits segment, which is kind of some quick questions and response answers. Is that okay with you?
Sure.
Okay, great. So my very first question for you, who is the toughest negotiator you've ever dealt with, past or present?
Oh, that's a tough one.
Feel free to pay homage to anyone to get in their good books.
You know what? It's really a hard question to answer. I mean, I feel, you know, when I entered this business, you know, the opportunity to deal with people like, you know, Harry Sinden and Bobby Clark and Cliff Fletcher and people of that nature, Bill Torrey. I mean, you know, these are people who are extremely passionate about hockey, and you know, that's not to take anything away. Obviously, you've got a different generation of general managers that exist now. The game was a lot different than, you know, the teams had the players' rights. First, when I first started, there was no free agency at all. You know, then you gradually, you know, the age was, you know, started to recede from, you know, 31, now down to 27. And, you know, when you get to that point, or actually 25, a player with 7 years, you know, with starting at 18, you know, plays 7 years pro, can be an unrestricted free agent at 25. You know, that really shifts the burden quite a bit. You know, if you have a good player, that shifts the burden to the club. And so I think it's created a more even playing field, in the sense that, you know, teams know that you know, if they have a situation where maybe they have a leg up on you, it's not that they're going to, you know, necessarily do you a favor or do anything. You know, they have to do the best they can for their organization, obviously. But at the same time, I think it's even the playing field, because, you know, the flip side exists where you have, you know, these unrestricted free agent players that I've mentioned, and it's not as if you're, you know, it's not a question of you doing a favor for the club either. It's just, you know, being in a position to have a good working relationship with those people that you're dealing with, whether it be the general manager, whether it be the owner. I mean, there's a lot of other, you know, factors. So I know I didn't really answer your question as far as a specific individual is concerned, but you know, I treasure the experiences that I had early on with, you know, with people who, you know, like I said, given their passion, but also their ability to adjust to different circumstances. I think that's the one thing that allows you to stay in the business and be successful over a long period of time, is you have to be willing to change. Things change, and, you know, the good managers are the ones that do adapt and change quickly and figure out that there's a new system, a new environment. How am I gonna do in that environment? And I think, you know, without, again, playing any favorites or mentioning any names, I think there's a group of managers who've been extremely effective working under this system, and then, you know, quite honestly, some that have had a much tougher time.
Jay, as we all know, you're negotiating an extension with Anton Volchenkov. How is it negotiating with the Murrays
Tim and Brian, because Tim and I have speculated that they might do this good cop, bad cop kind of scenario with you. But how are they to deal with?
Well, I've dealt with Tim more on the, on the younger players, and I've always had a good relationship with Tim. Obviously, at times he's been with Brian, but at times he's been in other organizations, and so, you know, we've worked together on different players. I've worked a lot more with Brian. Like I said, I've always found him to be straight up, tells you like it is, type of approach. And that's good. It's always good to have dialogue. It's good. It's always good to have time to flush things out and get into details if necessary. But at the same time, it's sometimes good when somebody sits down and says, well, this is where we're at. This is what we can do. And then you've got to make a decision. And at the same time, the club has to make a decision. I've always enjoyed Brian's approach. I mean, he's a consummate professional. He hasn't been in the game this long for, based on luck. He's been in the game this long because, he does a good job, whether it be, on the coaching side, where I certainly appreciated what he's done, and as well as the management side. And I don't want you to get the feeling that I'm just, saying good things. I'm just being straight with you in terms of the way I see Brian handling things.
All right. What is the most interesting or unique celebration you've seen or heard about following a contract signing?
Wow. I don't know that players, I think in most instances, what my experience has been is that there's a great relief, when you sign a contract. It seems like there's always pressure on the player, and they don't very often express it, And when you're talking to them about it, and especially if you're talking about it during the season, there's always a lot of pressure on them, in situations where they're playing, and at the same time articles are being written, people are saying things about them. So I think there tends to be more of a relief than a celebration when you sign that contract. I don't think it's a question of jumping for joy. I think really when you look at it, the times when players are most emotional about that is when they win games on the ice. That's really where the high-flying emotion comes. I've certainly been involved in seeing quite a few Stanley Cup, dressing room celebrations, and I would say that that's where you're going to see a lot more of that than when a guy actually puts his pen to paper. I will answer it in this sense, though. I mean, I've been involved in a few offer sheet cases. One that I could think of from early on with Kevin Stevens, who was with Pittsburgh but signed a free agent offer sheet with Boston, which was his hometown team. And his family the irony was it was a great opportunity for him, on the surface in terms of the way it looked, the ability to go home. And I think at that time he went from making $115,000 to making over $1 million from one contract to the next. So it was quite a bit of a raise as well. The funny thing about that was that I think if he had to do it all over again, money might not have played might not have been the greatest objective. In his case, I mean, it certainly, his career worked out a lot better when he was in Pittsburgh than it was in Boston, and I think he had the most productive time in his career with the Penguins.
Jay, earlier this year we had Jared Cowan on the program, and he talked about how signing his first pro contract was the greatest thrill. Just based on your experience, do you find the players get more excited when they sign their first deal or when they sign maybe their biggest contract?
I think it depends on the circumstances. I think that when you're dealing with the superstar players or the players that are really on the upper echelon of the game, I don't think they get too excited, you know, by any of that, really. They sort of, you know, expect that early in their career that a contract's going to be done. It's going to give them an opportunity to do what they do best. And I think as they go on in their careers, there's always the desire to match your achievement with the reward financially. But I don't think that the upper echelon players really gain the satisfaction of that. I think there are some cases wherein, you know, the player is caught in a bad set of circumstances. Maybe the team doesn't appreciate the player as much as the player feels he provides a certain value. And, you know, I've been involved in some of those kinds of negotiations. And we had Nikolai Habibulin, who was in Phoenix and sat out for 2 seasons. No player in the history of professional sports has done that. He did it in the prime of his career. And, he lost 2 seasons, but he felt the circumstances, you know, in Phoenix for him, they were going through an ownership change. The owner really didn't want to make any further commitment to the club financially at all. And he decided to take a stand. And I think it was very satisfying for him not only to earn the type of contract that proved out what his value was when he signed in Tampa, but then, you know, to take that team from, you know, where they were, which was, you know, basically in the basement, to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals and winning that. I think there was a whole lot of satisfaction in the equation and in totality.
I can't believe I'm about to ask this question because it's about Jerry Maguire, and I don't know how you feel about that movie, but I'm sure it's pretty cliche for you at this point. But have you ever heard a client say with a straight face, "Jay, show me the money"?
Well, they said it a lot more when the movie came out.
I can't believe they actually did that.
It was a pretty good running joke. I actually think they did a really good job with the movie. I mean, they had to create the love interest, which is typical for Hollywood. But aside from that, the client player relationship was pretty pretty accurate. I mean, you know, you spend a great deal of time with the players. You learn a lot about them as people. You know, you have to evaluate them in terms of, you know, their ability to withstand and understand the way they view certain situations. You know, some players, you know, their priorities are way different than others. And you've got to deal with the different personalities. But in the end, you know, if you don't have a real great understanding and great desire to act on behalf of the player and really have that, you know, develop that genuine feeling between the player and the client. It's a personal services business where, you have to weigh the fact that as much as you enjoy what the player does, you know, you still have to make and help the player make an educated decision as to what his value is. You can't overvalue him because you like him so much or because you've spent time you've got to set that aside. But at the same time, you develop some really good relationships. And I find that when especially when there's quote unquote something to fight for, you know, like I said, when particularly when you think your value is a lot different from what the club thinks your value is, and then you end up being right, I think there's a great deal of satisfaction in that. Not to say that you want to prove the club wrong or prove an individual wrong who's the manager or the owner or whoever it might be, but, you know, ultimately just for your own self-satisfaction. So, you know, I think that part of the movie was really accurate. You know, we do, I mean, you know, you don't often, you know, have much success in the agent business with one client, so that's what he ended up with. But you know, it did show the human side to the, you know, to the player agent relationship, which I think was very accurate.
Tim's favorite part of that movie was the Secret Garden song. But Jay, finally, what's the first thing that you're going to do when you get off the phone with us?
The first thing I'm going to do is try and fix my computer. I've spent a fair amount of my day at the Apple store today, and technology is something, like I said earlier, you've got to constantly adjust and adapt to. But you know, we enjoy, you know, as I said before we started the show, we enjoy the work that you guys do, because I think that there's a real good place for your audience to gain some understanding or a different vantage point to the game that you might not get from, you know, just a regular website or you know mainstream media or you know the local newspaper. So, and not to disrespect any of that medium, but the fact is that the world is changing, and I think that, you know, the service that you guys provide to your audience is a great one.
Yeah, the world moves pretty fast sometimes, and Jay, we're very glad that you could fit us into your fast life, and we sincerely appreciate your honest answers and taking the time to talk with us today.
Well, it's been my pleasure.
So it's nice to know that people have computer issues with Macs too. That's good. That's what I took from that.
Yeah, that's all you absorbed from that interview. Yeah. I almost feel like I'm going to have to listen to that like two or three times.
Yeah.
Get a clear sense.
There was a lot going on there. He was a very precise and calculated individual. Not that his answers were formulated, but he really took the time to think through all the questions and to explain it rationally and honestly.
Yeah. No, he's very candid.
Yep.
Very candid.
I see why now he's a good sports agent. Actually, that makes a lot of sense, right?
Yeah.
I can picture him dealing with the GMs, and when you're that professional and civil and educated as well on the game and in your trade, good things are going to happen.
That was perhaps one of my favorite interviews.
Yep, absolutely. I don't even know what we say about this.
Oh, that was 50 minutes long.
Yep.
Obviously, it'll get edited down for the website's purposes, but that was awesome.
Yep. Definitely good. And thank God we're not paying for it, because an hour of a lawyer's time.
There you go. But we hope you guys enjoyed the show. We know that's a lot of information to absorb, but we hope you liked the interview with Jay Grossman. We'll appreciate any feedback. Or
you can check him out on Twitter if you want to follow him, stay up to date. There's also a Puck Agency blog out there as well you can check out. Just Google it. Stay on top of it, folks.
Yeah, exactly. But hope you guys enjoyed the show this week. We'll be back next week with hopefully another good guest.
Yeah, someone you've been clamoring for.
So, anyways.
I'm smirking too much right now. Wait, yeah. See you next week.
Captain, there are doubts regarding your ability. The captain.